It is Monday, July 13th. The news cycle is moving faster than the infrastructure can handle, and we have a lot to cover. Let's get into it. Tech industry analysts are reporting mounting friction between Apple and OpenAI regarding talent acquisition. Reports indicate that Apple has raised concerns over OpenAI's aggressive recruitment of former Apple employees, specifically those with access to proprietary hardware and manufacturing processes. This is a shift in how these two companies relate to one another. For years, they were dancing around the same ecosystem as software partners. Now, the tension suggests that Apple views OpenAI's expansion into hardware-adjacent AI as a direct threat to its long-term dominance. Look, it is not hard to see why Apple is concerned. They are trying to build a defensive wall around their research and development pipeline. If these personnel moves lead to the transfer of trade secrets, it could force OpenAI to scrap or redesign entire projects. That would be a significant delay for a company trying to move from pure AI models into the physical, high-stakes world of hardware design. Here is the thing about this mess. OpenAI has spent the last year hiring hundreds of Apple alumni. They clearly wanted the expertise, but by bringing in that much institutional knowledge, they have invited intense scrutiny from their partners. OpenAI is currently navigating a critical pre-IPO window. They need to be perfect right now. Instead, they are caught in the weeds of supply chain coordination and defending their hiring practices. It is a shitty situation for a company that is already dealing with internal instability and public, high-profile feuds between its leadership and people like Elon Musk. Meanwhile, the broader tech market is starting to look a little shaky. We are seeing sharp corrections elsewhere. Investors are looking at these high-growth tech darlings and asking if the math actually pencils out. It feels like the era of unchecked, rapid expansion is hitting a wall. You have intellectual property disputes, labor tensions in the automotive sector, and investors who are finally waking up to the risks of overvaluation. Apple is betting that they can slow down a competitor by applying pressure. OpenAI is betting that they can outrun the consequences by moving faster than the industry can keep up. Either way, the days of these companies playing nice in the sandbox are officially over. It turns out that when you start building the same gadgets, you stop being partners and start being targets. We are watching the AI hardware ecosystem pivot from collaborative growth to a zero-sum game. And frankly, I think we are just getting started. That is the reality of a zero-sum game. But while tech giants fight over hardware, the floor is falling out from under the Senate. The Senate is currently facing a legislative standstill. With key leadership absent or dealing with health issues, the chamber is struggling to maintain its operational capacity. The immediate impact is a legislative backlog. The administration is pushing for a new policy agenda, but the Senate lacks the bodies to move it forward. This has already derailed unrelated, bipartisan housing legislation. The executive branch is demanding a legislative agenda that the Senate simply does not have the operational capacity to pass. It's a hell of a position to be in. We have a government that wants to sprint, but the legislative engine has lost its primary mechanics. This isn't just about one man. It's about a Senate that is getting older by the day. The average age of a member is now over 65. We are seeing a pattern where the entire legislative body relies on a handful of aging individuals whose health can completely disrupt national security priorities overnight. There is no institutional standard for health disclosures, so we are left guessing about the actual capacity of the leadership. It raises a pretty grim question. How much longer can a legislature function when its most essential members are physically unable to show up for work? While the Senate struggles to keep the lights on, the administration is leaning into a model of aggressive, centralized control. Look at what is happening in Venezuela. The U.S. government has recently tightened its oversight of the country's financial and resource distribution networks through new sanctions and diplomatic mandates managed from Washington. The U.S. is now effectively tethered to the economic and political fortunes of the Venezuelan regime. If that place goes sideways, we own it. It's the same story with the Strait of Hormuz. We moved from a regional dispute to direct military confrontation with Iran. We are striking missile and drone sites. Global oil prices jumped 4%, and there are no open diplomatic channels to prevent this from spiraling into a longer conflict. The administration seems to prefer this kind of unilateral, high-intensity executive action. They are even using subpoenas against journalists to track down leaks about defensive systems on Air Force One. It's a clear signal that they value information control over transparency, and they aren't afraid to use federal power to get it. But even with all that power, the system is showing cracks. The labor market is tightening, and we are facing a structural shortage of workers in essential fields like nursing and engineering. We can plan all the high-tech military modernization we want, but if you don't have the people to staff the industrial systems behind it, the whole thing is just a concept on paper. To top it all off, we have the Trump family investment strategy. They are dumping money into defense tech startups that then turn around and benefit from Pentagon spending. It's a feedback loop where federal procurement priorities are being shaped by the private financial interests of the president's inner circle. The takeaway here is pretty straightforward. Our government is becoming a collection of fragile systems. We have aging leadership that can't keep the Senate moving, a foreign policy that is tethered to volatile regimes, and an economy that is struggling to find the workers to keep the country running. None of these problems are happening in isolation. They are all converging at once. It's a system designed for a different era, and frankly, it's starting to look like it's being held together by duct tape and sheer momentum. The Senate is in chaos, which is a hell of a thing to watch while the tech market is busy cannibalizing itself. OpenAI just pulled another move that changes the math for everyone. OpenAI has released a new model update that effectively cuts the cost of top-tier AI models in half. This move forces a market-wide scramble, as companies like Anthropic face a brutal choice between slashing prices or pushing out faster, more frequent updates to stay relevant. The industry is responding by moving away from relying on one single, massive model. Enterprise tech is shifting toward model routing, where companies use cheap, small models for basic chores and save the expensive, high-intelligence models for the heavy lifting. Microsoft is leading this charge, pulling back from third-party vendors to build proprietary internal alternatives. They want to own the value chain, rather than just renting it from someone else. Here's the thing. This isn't just about saving a few bucks on tokens. As agentic systems, AI that can plan and execute workflows, become the standard, token usage is skyrocketing. If you're running every single interaction through a high-cost frontier model, your operational expenses are going to hit a wall. The market is splitting in two. If you can't offer high performance at a low price, you're basically relegated to the bargain bin of niche use cases. There's a darker side to this efficiency race, too. People are starting to talk about public equity stakes in AI labs. The idea is that if these systems are going to replace human labor, then the companies building them should pay a kind of social tax. It sounds like a pipe dream, but look at the trend of sovereign wealth-style deals between governments and tech labs. We're moving toward a world where AI companies aren't just private businesses. They're treated like critical national infrastructure. Meanwhile, some builders are deciding the cloud is too expensive to trust. They're running persistent, local AI infrastructure instead. We're talking about sovereign software factories. Engineers are setting up local gear, like high-end workstations packed with specialized graphics chips, to run agent loops around the clock. It turns the software development process on its head. Instead of a human spending all day prompting a chatbot, They just oversee a queue of pre-tested code. The agents handle the security scans, the code reviews, and the bug hunting. By moving this work local, these teams can run thousands of failure cycles without blowing their budget on cloud API calls. It's a massive competitive advantage for anyone who can actually manage the hardware. Which, honestly, is where things get complicated. Because we've hit the end of the line for general-purpose performance gains. The industry is obsessing over domain-specific architectures now. We aren't looking for faster chips in the abstract. We're looking for chips that are hyper-specialized for matrix multiplication. The problem is that the hardware doesn't matter if the software stack is garbage. The market leaders are winning because they spent years building the specialized libraries that keep developers locked in. It's a hell of a moat. If you're a hardware startup trying to break in, you aren't just fighting chip design. You're fighting a decade of software ecosystem lock-in. Even in the automotive industry, the same dynamic is playing out. Major tech providers are pushing to make their centralized compute platform the brain of every car on the road. They're offering a turnkey system that pulls data from every vehicle to improve the model for everyone else. It's a classic network effect. If an automaker wants to keep up, they have to either sign up for these platforms or spend billions trying to build a proprietary stack that might fail anyway. It's a strange moment. We are watching the transition from software-defined to AI-defined everything. The companies that own the compute and the data are becoming the central nervous system for entire industries. Whether you're a software engineer running local agents or a car manufacturer trying to build a dashboard, the story is the same. You either own the infrastructure, or you're just an assembler of someone else's tech. And that's a shitty position to be in if you want to control your own roadmap. Owning your roadmap is the dream, right? But the reality is that most people are just digging their own graves by sticking to plans that stopped working years ago. Founders and professionals are increasingly being told to abandon their long-held projects and strategies when the data says they are failing. Recent guidance suggests that clinging to past investments, what's known as the sunk cost fallacy, is a primary driver of business insolvency and personal burnout. The logic is straightforward. If you keep funding a failing campaign or product, you lose the capital spent and sacrifice the opportunity to invest in growth. When leaders treat the end of a project as a simple administrative task instead of a personal failure, they preserve their financial runway. This approach encourages teams to report bad data early, which prevents minor errors from ballooning into expensive, career-ending disasters. Here is the thing about that. It sounds clean on paper, but it asks people to actively suppress their own egos. It is easy to say, look at the data, when you are not the one who spent 3 years building the platform that is currently tanking. Most of us are wired to see our work as part of our identity. When a project fails, we feel like we are failing. The advice here is to adopt a scientist mindset, where you treat your work as a series of experiments rather than tests that define your worth. If an experiment fails, it is just data. It isn't a judgment. There is a tension here between these models of professional growth. One strategy suggests that you should pause, accept the chaos of your environment, and strategically lower your standards on non-essential tasks to avoid burnout. It calls this expectation bankruptcy. You stop trying to be perfect everywhere, and you focus on the one thing that actually produces results. It is about moving away from rigid, perfectionist output toward a messy, iterative process. But then, you have the other side of the coin. That perspective argues that longevity requires a deliberate departure from your comfort zone, often through a mix of hustle and community. This isn't just about cutting your losses. It is about leveraging your professional network to jump from a secure but secondary role into something riskier and more fulfilling. It even suggests that resisting new technology, like AI tools, is a strategic error that keeps you in a defensive crouch. The common thread is that we are all terrified of testing our identities in the open market. We stay in the safe, administrative roles because they offer security. We stick with the failing project because we have already put so much time into it. We keep grinding harder at the wrong door because stopping feels like admitting defeat. What nobody likes to admit is that pivoting is just a polite corporate word for quitting. It is rebranding the moment you realize you were wrong as an act of strategic brilliance. Look, I get it. There is a real value in not being a stubborn idiot. If you are pouring money into a hole, stop pouring the money. If your current workflow is burning you out, drop the perfectionism and do an acceptable job on the stuff that doesn't matter. That's just being smart. But we should be honest about why this is hard. It is not because we lack the data to know when to quit. We almost always have the data. It is because we are afraid of what we look like when the music stops and we are the only one standing there, empty-handed. We want to believe that if we just push a little harder, the reality will eventually bend to our initial vision. Usually it doesn't. Sustainable growth isn't about being right the first time. It is about how fast you can stop being wrong. If your identity is tied to the success of a specific, failing initiative, you are going to go down with the ship. If your identity is tied to your ability to learn, shift, and try again, you've got a shot at actually making something work. It is a shitty, uncomfortable process. But it is better than the alternative, which is just waiting for the runway to run out while you defend a goal that nobody actually cares about anymore. That is the trap of the sunk cost fallacy. It is a messy way to live, but at least it is more honest than what is happening in professional sports. The FIFA World Cup is no longer just a tournament. It is a massive, real-time negotiation hub for the global transfer market. Players are now challenging traditional authority to prioritize their professional perspective over rigid hierarchy. This works as long as the team keeps winning. If the results dip, that friction becomes a major problem for the organization. The tournament is also hitting an inflection point. There is significant pressure to expand to a 64-team model. That brings real risks regarding match quality and the dilution of the tournament's prestige. It is a hell of a balancing act for FIFA. They want the commercial upside of more games, but they have to keep the actual competition from turning into a slog. Meanwhile, the business of owning sports teams is drifting toward the ultra-wealthy tech crowd. This deal confirms that the gap between minority stakes and full operational control is widening rapidly. You are seeing a clear shift away from legacy ownership toward venture-backed models. These new owners want to treat teams like media and real estate conglomerates, which is exactly why they are obsessed with capturing proprietary fan data. Major League Soccer is leaning into this right now. They are running a First Match on Us campaign to turn casual World Cup viewers into local ticket buyers. They are not trying to sell a ticket today. They are trying to build a database they can target for the next decade. It is a smart play, but it highlights the league's biggest hurdle, which is converting global interest into local, recurring revenue. The NBA is moving in a different direction with player contracts. Some stars are signing extensions that are lower than the maximum they could have demanded. People are calling it a team-friendly sacrifice. That is a nice way of saying they are subsidizing their own supporting cast. This puts massive pressure on other players. When a star takes less money, owners get leverage to demand the same from everyone else. This creates a weird incentive structure for teams. The league's current lottery rules penalize obvious tanking. Teams are now forced to chase 30 or 35 wins rather than the top draft pick. They are focusing on internal development because win-loss records are no longer the only way to measure success. It is a model built on efficiency rather than pure talent acquisition. Then you have teams that are effectively punting on a season before it even starts. The team is trying to trade their star players because they do not believe they can compete for a playoff spot. They are pairing a first-time head coach with an inexperienced defensive coordinator. It is a recipe for a volatile season. The schedule is also a disaster for them. They face a mid-season stretch against opponents coming off bye weeks. That makes an early losing streak almost inevitable. Once the losses pile up, The front office will likely trade their best assets for draft picks. It is a cold, calculated move. They are betting that future potential is worth more than the production of a star player on a losing team. There is a common thread running through all of this. Whether it is FIFA, the NFL, or the NBA, the goal is shifting from the game itself to the data behind it. Organizations are trading intimacy for access. They are letting cameras in the locker room and pushing players to take less money to keep rosters deep. They are doing it because they know the real value is not just in the final score. It is in the ability to own the fan relationship and the media ecosystem that surrounds it. It is a smart strategy, but it is changing the fundamental character of these sports. You have to wonder what happens when the fans realize they are just data points in a billionaire's portfolio. The business of sports is becoming a giant data play. It is not the only place where the old rules are getting tossed out the window. A few other things worth knowing today. Marketing types are ditching PDFs for actual software tools to grab leads. It makes sense, since a working calculator or utility is a hell of a lot more useful than another white paper collecting dust in your downloads folder. De Beers is currently fighting the rise of lab-grown diamonds by cutting wholesale prices in secret. They want to keep their official price floor high while quietly handing out discounts to keep their market share from cratering. The global economy is pivoting from an oil-intensive model to one run on electricity. It is not just about cars. The massive power demands of AI and cloud computing are forcing countries to rethink their entire energy infrastructure. There is a weird glitch in modern cosmology called the Boltzmann brain problem. It suggests that random, spontaneous fluctuations in space should theoretically produce conscious brains more often than they produce an entire universe, which makes our current reality look a bit suspicious. If you are buying real estate with debt, you are betting that the market will always be stable and your tenants will always pay. When the market turns, that is a quick way to find yourself completely underwater. NFL fans with young quarterbacks on rookie contracts are becoming a nightmare online. They are so protective of these players that any fair media criticism gets met with a level of toxicity that honestly makes me wonder why anyone bothers covering the sport. American exceptionalism works as a national glue because it is based on a shared creed of equality rather than bloodlines. It is a unique way to keep a massive, diverse population pulling in the same direction. Entrepreneurs who take equity over a salary are betting on their own long-term compounding value. Taking a paycheck is safer, but it means the company keeps every cent of the upside you helped create. Adding more funds to your investment portfolio is usually just a way to soothe your own anxiety. After three funds, you are likely just adding complexity without adding any real mathematical benefit. Notebooks are not just for storage, they are cognitive tools. If you are using the wrong format, like trying to do complex math on unlined paper, you are just making your own brain work harder than it needs to. China has prioritized brain-computer interfaces in its latest five-year plan. They are moving fast enough that the innovation gap with the United States is closing much quicker than a lot of people realize. Solo journalists are using AI to turn meeting transcripts into actual stories. It is a way to bypass the bloated, labor-heavy newsrooms of the past and keep small, independent media outlets alive. Blockchain developers are adopting distributed systems principles to separate how operations are ordered from how they are executed. It basically turns the network into a general consensus layer that can host anything from file systems to smart contracts. Stoicism is really just a way to put a gap between you and your immediate reaction. It is a handy trick for deciding if a feeling is actually useful or just noise. That is the update for today. I will be back tomorrow to see what else has broken.